Hello, Lynn and everyone. Happy Sunday evening. I hope you all had a magnificent day. It's good to see you. I'm going to play a song because you know what? I got my music back, which is really fun. It was kind of funny. I think some of you heard me say this morning, I spent all day yesterday recovering my music. I guess there was a corrupted file in my iTunes, and it was eating my music. It was a cannibalistic file. So we spent all day getting my music back, fixing that up, and then just now when I went and turned on my music, it said zero files. I went, oh my God! But I just logged out, logged back in, and yay! I got my music back. So I'm happy about that. And so I'm going to play a song by Omkara. Some of you may know Omkara. She is one of Muji's friends. She often sings at Muji's satsangs. And the name of this particular song is Remember.
It'll be
So, yeah, wonderful way to start. At least it was for me. I enjoy sitting with my eyes closed and listening. So we're going to be looking at the seven steps. And tonight we start with 620. So I am going to provide a link to 620 in my journal. The quotes that we are reading are still quotes from Nisargadatta Maharaj. And this is quote number 620 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. Freedom from the ego self is the fruit of self-inquiry. Oh, I think we did that one last week. That one sounds very familiar. Yeah, we did. So we'll just go over this quickly. We'll go over these journal entries quickly, but I guess it's a nice review since that's where I started. Freedom from the ego self is the fruit of self-inquiry. And I remember telling you all last week that one thing that I have learned through my own practice of self-inquiry is that self-inquiry really isn't the question. The question's a tool. Who am I? What am I? That's a tool. But what the question does is it redirects your attention. So that instead of your attention being focused out on objects, and even thoughts and emotions are objects, instead of your attention being focused out on objects, your attention is turned when you ask the question, and it's focused on the self, or focused on awareness or beingness. Freedom from the ego self is the fruit of self-inquiry. So again, it's not the question itself. It is the looking, the turning attention toward the self, looking at the self, you could say, brings the self back into view. The self has become dim to us because we have been looking out away from it. But when we turn and we look back towards it again, the dimness fades, and the self becomes bright again. So I'll look quickly at my journal and just see what I wrote in my journal. 620A says, "Why question everything always without ceasing? To break the spell and be free. To know reality as reality and no longer be deceived." And two things really stand out for me. Of course, this is my journal, so it was written to stand out for me. The two things really stand out for me. One is the word spell. This object focus is like a spell. It's like a mesmerizing spell. We are so addicted to object consciousness, especially the addiction to our thoughts and emotions, paying attention to them. And so we do need a tool like inquiry to help us break that addiction, break that spell, and turn our attention around and look at ourselves. I shared with you at least once, maybe twice, a story that Michael Langford has in his book, The Most Direct Means to Eternal Bliss. And the idea in the story is that, you know, an entire community of people are born and raised in a movie theater. They never ever leave the theater. And the entire time that they're alive, there's a movie playing on the screen and all of the attention is focused on that movie. And they really think the movie is life. The movie is important. And of course, they're very caught up in the movie. And for some reason, one of the people gets the curious thought, "I wonder where the movie comes from." And he turns around and he sees the stream of light coming from the projector room. And he follows the stream of light all the way back until he finds the projector and he realizes that the movie is nothing. You know, the movie is an illusion that's coming about through this projection device. And so he starts hollering at everyone else, "Hey, you guys, turn around. Look, there's a projector here." And most people don't even turn around. They're so addicted to looking at the movie. A few people turn around, glance for a second, but then just turn their attention right back to the movie. Well, obviously, we're the ones who are turning our attention to the movie. And we may glance for a second or two at the true self. We may get a glimmer of it. We may have an experience of it. But then we get caught up in the movie again. And the purpose of self-inquiry is to help break that spell, break that addiction, so that instead of being the ones staring at the movie, we're the ones that are turning, looking at the light and following the light. And yes, it's the same as Plato's cave, Dove says. Absolutely. The same as Plato's cave. The other thing that stands out for me in this journal entry is it says, "Why question everything always without ceasing? To break the spell and be free. To know reality as reality and no longer be deceived." And one thing that really stands out for me is that word deceived. You know, the song I just played for you from Omkara, you know, she shared some sentences like, "This life is beautiful," which is how some of us may see it, or all of us may see it that way some of the time. "This life is horrible," which is the way some of us may see it, or all of us may see it that way some of the time. "This life is beautiful," "This life is horrible," and then what she points out, "This life is just a dream." You see, we're deceived. It doesn't matter whether we think that this dream is wonderful or whether we think this dream is horrible. Either way, it's not reality. And so in order to know reality, in order to not be deceived anymore, this is why we practice inquiry. So again, 628 says, "Why question everything always without ceasing? To break the spell and be free, to know reality as reality and no longer be deceived." So now I'm scrolling down and clicking on 620B. 620B, of course, comes from the same quote, which again was, freedom from the ego self is the fruit of self-inquiry. Here's the journal. Be consistent in the choice for awareness. Distinguish between what is real, and that's what's directly experienced, and what is perceived. Notice what changes and what is always present. Be clear regarding truth through asking, what am I? I used to not know what direct experience meant. I thought that I had direct experience that I later learned through very deep contemplation. I learned that it was not direct experience. For example, if I hit my hand on this table, if I hit it hard enough, I can feel a little bit of pain. Ow, right? Ow, ow. And that seems like a direct experience. The hitting of the table, the pain in the finger, seems like a direct experience. But when I went into deep contemplation, some of you may remember the year 2012 when I had that year of, I called it increased silence, but I let go of almost all activity and I spent all day in contemplation. And during that year of contemplation, as you can imagine, I went very, very deep. And what I came to see is that this is not direct experience. I came to see that the world... Sorry, some dogs are fighting each other. Danielle, have you got control of that?
Yeah.
Okay. we have a big dog and a little dog, and we don't need the big dog eating the little dog. So when I do this and I feel the pain, ow, right? The body is what actually feels the pain. And the mind is what experiences the body. And I see the mind, which means I am at least twice removed from this experience. You know, most of us, we let our attention go fully into it, and so we don't realize that's not a direct experience, but it's not. And those of you who have been with me in live gatherings know that there's an experience I often ask you to try. I ask you to pinch your finger hard enough that it actually hurts. You know, feel the pain, like, ow, and don't stop. You know, just hold on to it, and feel the pain. But then, keep pinching. But look at the pain. And if you know, if you can find intuitively what I mean by look at the pain, you find there is a you that doesn't feel any pain at all, that is able to look at the pain in the body. So even the experience of pain and this body that you call yourself is not a direct experience. It is a perception. It is removed from the self. The only thing that is a direct experience is the self. The only thing that is a direct experience is the self, the isness, the I am, the beingness. The dogs are walking around now like they never had a fight. I wonder, there must have been a bone or something, something that they got between them. So 620B says, be consistent in the choice for awareness. Distinguish between what is real, and that is what is directly experienced, which I've just talked about, and what is perceived. And this, ouch, is perceived, right? That's perceived. It's not a direct experience. Distinguish between what is real, what is directly experienced, and what is perceived. Notice what changes. And of course, perception is always, always changing. Like, this hurts now, but then, you know, give it a few seconds and it doesn't hurt anymore, right? You know, perception is always changing. But what's constant? That's what I am. That's the real me, the isness, the beingness, the awareness, right? It's never changing. It's the same now, as I sit here as a 54-year-old woman, as it was when I was the earliest I remember would be like a 4-year-old child. The awareness, the isness, the beingness is unchanged. The body has changed a lot. The mind has changed a lot. But the isness has been the same. Be consistent in the choice for awareness. Distinguish between what is real, directly experienced, and what is perceived. Notice what changes and what is always present. Be clear regarding truth through asking, "What am I?" And again, the quote we were looking at was number 620, "Freedom from the ego self is the fruit of self-inquiry." So I'm going to scroll down and click on 621, and that's where our real beginning is, but apparently that little review is helpful, because we did it. So 621, the quote from Nisargadatta Maharaj is very, very short. It says, "To be a person is to be asleep." That's it. To be a person is to be asleep. I'm going to go straight to the journal. Number 621A. "It is not true at all that I am a person. To believe I am a person is to be deluded. What am I?" I suppose, there's a saying that we have in the Christian community. Most of y'all probably have heard it. There are things that you have to take on faith, right? Take that on faith. Yeah. And I suppose that's true here too. When we first begin self-inquiry, we don't necessarily know truly what we are. Our experience is, I'm a person. I'm a 54-year-old woman, right? When I hit my finger, it hurts, right? That's our experience. And so if we're going to begin this process of self-inquiry, we're actually kind of taking it on faith that that isn't true. At least enough faith that we have the willingness to really look. You know, I don't think my mother right now is ready for that type of faith. Right now, my mother would not take a moment to sit down and question, what am I? She's very clear on what she is. She's a 74-year-old woman, right? So as long as we are very clear, if that's our feeling anyway, we're very clear on what we are, we're not going to question. So some doubt has to come in regarding what we are. And there has to be faith that we are something other than what we perceive ourselves to be. And that's the beginning step for self-inquiry. And so that's what 621A is really doing. It's a statement of faith followed by actual inquiry, actual looking. "It is not true at all that I am a person." That is a statement of faith. You could call that an intellectual statement rather than a true experience. "It is not true at all that I am a person. To believe I am a person is to be deluded. What am I?" And then the looking begins. I am going to scroll down and click on 621B. Again, the Nisargadatta quote that we're looking at is very, very short. "To be a person is to be asleep." And so 621B says, "Because I do believe I am a person, I am deluded and what I see is not real. What am I?" So in 621A, we saw a statement of faith. I am not a person, right? What am I? This is a statement of honesty. I do believe that I'm a person, right? You need both. You need faith and honesty. This we could also call faith in this case a healthy doubt, right? A healthy doubt, a doubt that what, you know, we're doubting that what I've always perceived, what I've always believed is not necessarily true. We're doubting what we've always perceived, what we've always believed. So faith or a healthy doubt and honesty are needed. And I think we all know that sometimes it's the doubter phase in the nirvana. Exactly, Barb. And I think that we know that sometimes what falls away in spiritual communities, and this is specific about spiritual communities, if someone was completely alone in their living room practicing spirituality, this probably would not be a problem. But what happens in spiritual communities, because the ego is still there, what happens is we start wanting to look spiritual in front of others. And so we have the statement of faith, which is, I am not a person. But instead of using it as a statement of faith, or instead of using it as a healthy doubt, we just start mouthing it off as if it's true. You know, I am not a person. Some of us even quit using the word I. You know, like I becomes a bad word. We you know, start telling our mother, you're not my mother. I was never born. And what's missing is the honesty. The honesty is, I do believe I'm a person. In order to do true self-inquiry, you need the statement of faith or the healthy doubt, and you need the honesty. If you start telling yourself in a dishonest way, I am not a person, I am awareness, you're probably not going to practice inquiry either. Why look? You think you know it all, right? You think you're already enlightened. It's a very humble state that we're looking at here, the state of faith or healthy doubt along with honesty. And in this humility, we can begin to ask the question, who am I? What am I? We can begin looking in a very healthy way so that we start turning our attention away from the objects towards the light. And that, of course, is what's going to awaken us. And then we will know, I am not a person. So again, 621B is that statement of honesty that goes along with the statement of faith. Because I do believe I am a person, I am deluded. And what I see is not real. Okay? Healthy honesty combined with healthy doubt or faith allows me to then ask, what am I? I start looking from a very humble and sincere place. I'm going to scroll down underneath. Oh, I have written here, actually I'm going to stop for a moment. I have written here in my journal. Oh, this is another one of Michael Langford's stories. I have written in my journal another Michael Langford story, so let me just read it to you. It's right here. It says, a question might arise. Why does the awareness watching awareness method focus attention on one's ordinary, everyday background of awareness instead of attempting to look for infinite awareness? Some of you may have seen a post that I made the other day. But there is awareness, there's a, I'm going to call it human awareness that we can each focus on now. Or maybe not yet. There was a time when actually I couldn't even focus on that. Many of us maybe can focus on that now. But that human awareness is not yet the divine awareness. And the way that we know that human awareness is not the divine awareness, this is what I would call conscious awareness. When I go to sleep, conscious awareness is not present. And true awareness is always present. True awareness doesn't go away, divine awareness. So we know, since our awareness goes to sleep at night and our awareness wakes up in the morning, we know that this awareness that we're focusing on as humans is not divine awareness. And so the question is, why should I sit around and focus on an illusory human awareness? And so this story answers that question. All right, so let's go to the Michael Langford story. A question might arise, why does the awareness watching awareness method focus attention on one's ordinary, everyday background of awareness instead of attempting to look for infinite awareness? Here is an example that can answer this question. Imagine that you live in a mansion that has thousands of dark rooms and you are trying to find the sunlight. If you focus your attention on a beam of sunlight that enters one of the rooms and follow that beam and trace its origin, you can find the source of that light, the sun. However, if you hold the concept of the sun and ignore the beam of sunlight that enters some of the rooms, you could open 1,000 doors in dark rooms and never find the sun. In this example, the sun represents the infinite awareness, which is the true self. The beam of sunlight represents your ordinary, everyday consciousness. If people hold some concept of infinite awareness and try to find it, they will never find it. Your own everyday background of awareness is the path to infinite awareness, as sunlight is to the sun. So again, when we're talking about looking, when we're talking about asking, what am I, and turning our attention around and looking, we're talking about looking at our present experience of isness, beingness. Nisargadatta Maharaj calls it I am. It's often called awareness. Sometimes it's even called consciousness. But that is not the divine. That is often referred to as like the light of the moon, right? The light of the moon does not really have its own light. But if you follow the light of the moon, you're going to eventually find that it comes from the sun, just like the mansion story, right? So we focus on that. We be aware of that, our everyday awareness, our everyday consciousness, our everyday isness, our everyday sense of I am. And it leads us to the divine, to the infinite awareness, to awakening. And what's really nice about this is the awareness that we're focusing on, or the isness, or the beingness, or the I am-ness that we're focusing on, is with us all of the time. It's with us everywhere. So if you're sitting in the doctor's office waiting for your doctor appointment, you can sit there and practice awareness, watching awareness. And, you know, you can practice it with your eyes closed. If you want to, you can practice it with your eyes open. If you're, you know, standing in line at Walmart waiting for your turn to cash out with your groceries, you can practice awareness, watching awareness, right? It's just always, always with us. We can practice it multiple times per day. And in fact, if you start looking for opportunities to practice it, you'll start noticing more and more opportunities. I do think it's helpful to do what I call a formal practice each day, a sitting down, you know, meditation type of practice, watching awareness. And one reason I think that's helpful is because that keeps awareness, watching awareness in the forefront of our minds. And then we remember to do it throughout the day. At least that's the way I am. If I start skipping the morning formal time, then I also start forgetting during the day. It goes together. So it's useful for me to take this formal time in the morning, but the formal time is not the answer. The answer is learning to practice awareness, watching awareness eventually all of the time, Right. So the real answer is that's a formal practice time followed by multiple opportunities to practice and taking advantage of those opportunities throughout the day. All right, so now I'm going to scroll down and click on 622A. And 622, it's funny because 621 was very, very short. To be a person is to be asleep. And that was the quote from Nisargadatta. 622 is much longer. Here's 622. What prevents you from knowing yourself as all and beyond all is the mind based on memory. It has power over you as long as you trust it. Don't struggle with it. Just disregard it. Deprived of attention, it will slow down and reveal the mechanism of its working. Once you know its nature and purpose, you will not allow it to create imaginary problems. This also reminds me of the teachings of Inner Ramana that Barb mentioned earlier. Because I think the primary purpose of the teachings of Inner Ramana is to give us tools that help us deprive the mind of our attention. Right? So instead of sitting around and thinking about what I'm going to do tomorrow, you know, what's most important and all of that, the teachings of Inner Ramana just asked me in the moment to ask within, what am I to do now? And if I just live, you know, what am I to do now? You know, a task comes, I perform that task, and then when done, I say, okay, what am I to do now? Another task comes, I perform that task. You know, this eliminates all of the thinking about my priorities, thinking about what I like, what I don't like, what so-and-so is going to say if I get this done, or what so-and-so is going to say if I don't get this done. And, you know, it just takes all of that thinking out. You see, surrender in that way is helping to deprive the mind of attention. And, of course, that's the same thing with the mantra, right? The purpose of the mantra is so that we're not caught up in our daydream chatter in the mind all the time that's going on. So while I'm doing dishes, instead of being off in some daydream, I'm very thoughtfully and carefully saying my mantra in my mind. I am that I am. And then resting in the silence for as long as it lasts. And then when the mind starts to get active again, I say the mantra again, I am that I am. And it just helps me to not give my attention to those stories. And then, of course, we have the self-inquiry practices in the teachings of Inner Ramana as well. Who am I or what am I? As I mentioned earlier, you know, we are addicted to listening to the mind. And tools are helpful to break that addiction. But what really heals is the non-attention, the not listening, the not believing, the not engaging. This is why A Course in Miracles in the workbook begins by teaching us our thoughts are meaningless. You see, if we really learn that lesson that our thoughts are meaningless, we're not going to give them so much attention. I mean, why do we give our mind attention? Because we think our thoughts have meaning, you know, and we give it all kinds of attention. But if we learn what Jesus is teaching us in A Course in Miracles, that our thoughts do not have meaning, they won't hold our attention. And what you'll find, if you haven't already discovered this, is when you don't give your attention to a story, the story, well, it just doesn't get legs. You know, a thought may still come in. You know, a thought may come in something like, oh, she's not going to be happy if I don't get this done today, right? But if we don't give attention to that thought, she's not going to be happy if I don't get this done today, and we just go right on with whatever our intuition is guiding us to do, that thought does not develop into a story. It only develops into this story where now I'm imagining my conversation with her, you know, trying to explain to her why I didn't get to whatever and how this was more important and blah, 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 blah. You know, that whole mental story only develops if I give attention to that first thought. But if I see that first thought as meaningless and I don't give it my attention, it simply does not develop. It disappears. It was just a thought opportunity that showed up that was not embraced, was not taken advantage of, and then it just goes. It's just gone. It leaves. So again, Nisargadatta says, what prevents you from knowing yourself as all and beyond all is the mind based on memory. It has power over you as long as you trust it. Don't struggle with it. Just disregard it. Deprived of attention, it will slow down and reveal the mechanism of its working. Once you know its nature and purpose, you will not allow it to create imaginary problems. That reminds me also of Buddha. I haven't studied a lot of Buddhism, a little bit, but not a lot. But my main experience of Buddha is from watching the movie Little Buddha. So when I say that reminds me of Buddha, I'm really thinking of Little Buddha, the movie. And, you know, when he's sitting under the Bodhi tree and he's having his awakening experience, if you've seen the movie, you know, the last thing that he does is he pulls an image of himself out of a puddle and he's set looking at the image of himself. And, of course, that image represents the ego or the mind. And he says something like, ah, architect, you will not build this house again. Or something like that. If any of you all are Buddha experts, you may be able to provide a better quote than the one I just did, but that's the idea. He looks at the image of the mind, the image of the ego, and realizes that's the architect. That's what's been building the illusion, right? And he looks it in the eye and says, ah, architect, you will not build this house again. And that's what Nisargadatta is saying here. Once we see the mind, like Buddha did in that movie, you know, he's looking right at it. Once we really see the mind for what it is, we're not going to let it create imaginary problems anymore. Right? We're not going to have that interest. Again, it only does it from our interest and our attention. And if we don't have the interest, we don't give it the attention, it cannot build. So Nisargadatta says, what prevents you from knowing yourself as all and beyond all is the mind based on memory. It has power over you as long as you trust it. Don't struggle with it, just disregard it. Deprived of attention, it will slow down and reveal the mechanism of its working. Once you know its nature and purpose, you will not allow it to create imaginary problems. All right, so now I'm going to go to the journal, 622A. I am not the mind, nor am I slave to the mind. If I appear to be caught in its spell, it is because I still want to give attention to the mind. When I do not want to give attention to mind, it will not get my attention. So what we've seen tonight is we've seen a statement of faith. We've seen a statement of honesty. This is what I would call a statement of taking responsibility. Right? I am taking responsibility. I am not the victim of the mind. If I still get sucked in, and if I still spend a lot of time and energy listening to the stories of the mind, it's because I still want to. It's because I'm still entertained. I'm still interested. I still believe the mind is my security. I still believe its answers are my answers. I still believe its problems are my problems. I need to redo the first few lessons of A Course in Miracles over and over and over again until I finally come to see that those thoughts are meaningless. or I need to do the practices of the teaching of Inner Ramana, the surrender and the mantra and the self-inquiry very consistently until that addiction to the mind is broken. But I need to come to realize that this isn't what I want. I need to realize what I truly want. That for me is bringing heart into it. I think sometimes there are people who haven't found yet how to bring heart into the process. And for them, spiritual practice seems to be a struggle. Like, it goes something like this. Oh, I'm not supposed to listen to the mind. Oh, damn, I got to quit listening to the mind. You know, and there's like this fight going on. We saw Nisargadatta earlier saying, oh, right here in this same quote, don't struggle with it, right? Don't struggle with it. And when you bring heart into it, you don't struggle with it. You just disregard it, like Nisargadatta is saying. And the way that works is, let's say I'm caught up in some story. I'm listening to some story. I see myself caught up in the story, and then I stop. And I ask, what do I truly want? I want to know reality. I don't want to be deceived anymore. You know, like we saw earlier. I want to know the truth. I want to know who I am. Then I just lose interest in the mind because I brought the heart into it. I just lose interest. The story dies for me because I'm not interested in the story. I don't have to struggle. I don't have to fight. I just have to bring the heart into it. I have to realize it's not what I want. Realize what I truly want. And then I lose interest in the mind. So again, 622A says, I am not the mind, nor am I slave to the mind. Or we could also add, I am not the victim of the mind. I am not the mind, nor am I slave to the mind. If I appear to be caught in its spell, it is because I still want to give attention to the mind. When I do not want to give attention to the mind, it will not get my attention. Again, a statement of responsibility. So I'm going to scroll down and click on 622B. We're still looking at the same Nisargadatta quote, so I will read that quote. What prevents you from knowing yourself as all and beyond all is the mind based on memory. It has power over you as long as you trust it. Don't struggle with it. Just disregard it. Deprived of attention, it will slow down and reveal the mechanism of its working. Once you know its nature and purpose, you will not allow it to create imaginary problems. All right, 622B says, patterns of thinking repeated again and again make the veil that appears to hide yourself from yourself. Of course, this too is an illusion and an absolute impossibility. As I mentioned to you all in 2012, when I was spending pretty much all day, every day in contemplation, I went very, very deep. There was some absolute clarity that was there. And what you're seeing here is that absolute clarity is showing up. I'm writing, you know, that when you think, that it makes this veil that covers up yourself. But in this deep contemplation, I'm so aware of the self, I'm aware that the self can't ever actually be covered up. So I so I have to go and make that comment in the journal. Of course, that's an impossibility. And this is what we hear from people who are awakened, right? When they awaken, they say they realize it was always here. It's not that it's actually covered up by a veil or a curtain or a heavy blanket or anything else. It's simply that our attention is focused in the wrong direction. We are looking away. We're focused on the thoughts, focused on the emotions, focused on the objects of perception. And so we don't notice what is always here as the most obvious fact. But it is never really hidden. You can't be hidden. That's an impossibility. But at the same time, in order to realize what is always here, we do need to lose interest in the mind. Because it is our interest in the mind that is distracting us away from the obvious. Just like in the theater story I told you earlier, you know, to anybody who looked, it would be obvious that's just a movie on the screen and it's being projected from behind us, right? But in order for the obvious to happen, they had to break their addiction to the movie that they were raised with. So, our movie, in fact, if you've ever read The Untethered Soul by Michael Singer, he calls those thoughts that are happening in the mind all the time, he calls those the inner movie. So sure, we're addicted somewhat to the outer movie, you know, perception, but even more, we're addicted to the inner movie. Our eyes are glued to the screen of our thoughts. And so we don't notice the light, the isness, the obviousness. So as 622B says, patterns of thinking repeated again and again make the veil that appears to hide yourself from yourself. Of course, this too is an illusion and an absolute impossibility because yourself cannot truly be hidden. So now I'm going to scroll down and go to 622C. Again, we're still looking at the same Nisargadatta quote. I'll stick with the journal. 622C says, why do I believe the mind? Why do I trust it at all? Why do I listen to it and give it my attention? Do I honestly find any value in the mind any longer? These are good questions. Because the reason that we listen to the mind is because we believe it has value. When it's telling me stories of how it's going to make sure that, you know, you people like me, that I have plenty of money, you know, whatever else, that I'm beautiful, whatever other stories it's telling me, you know, I think it's really protecting me. It's taking care of me. It's my number one. You know, that's funny that we would think that because if you pay close attention to the mind, you know, it isn't really buttering us up all the time. It's also telling us how stupid we are, how ugly we are, how, you know, lazy we are, how, right? But still, somehow, we overlook that and we think the mind is our savior. We think it's me, even more, even closer than the savior. It's me. It's my wisdom. My best bet for making it in this world. And A, we need to see that. We need to see, you know, we may love our children. We may love our money. But what we love even more is our mind. We need to see that. And we also need to see that that value is unfounded. We need to watch the mind closely. In fact, right now I'm teaching three NTI classes. And what I ask people in the NTI class, the homework assignment they often have, is to watch the mind like a scientist who's really curious about how the mind works. And if you really watch the mind, you see, when you're lost in thinking, when you're lost in the stories, you're not watching the mind. You're absorbed by the mind. If you can stand back and watch the mind, even take notes. I took notes about what my mind was saying to me. You're going to start noticing that your mind does not deserve the value that you give it. I mean, sure, there's a useful aspect to the mind, like when I sit down to do taxes, using the mind to do the math, to read the forms. I mean, that little bit of mind is very useful. But I'm referring to the chatter. The chatter that just goes on all of the time. And it's not really useful. And so we need to, first of all, realize that we value it highly. And then we need to look and see that it's not worth valuing highly. You know, there's an illogical approach that will lead us to lose interest in the mind. In fact, Michael Singer says something in his book like, you know, if you could take the mind out and put it inside another person and put that person on the sofa next to you and then let that person talk to you like your mind talks to you, he says you wouldn't listen to it for more than 30 minutes. You'd throw it out. We need to see that. And when we see that the mind doesn't really have the value that we give it, then we can honestly just lose interest. And a story may pop up, and they'll be like, I'm not really interested in that. Another story will start to try and pop up. I'm not really interested in that. And like I said earlier, if you don't give your attention after that first line, the story does not develop. So again, 622C, why do I believe the mind? These are questions of looking. Why do I trust it at all? Why do I listen to it and give it my attention? Do I honestly find any value in mind any longer? And there's also a 622D, so I'm clicking on that. Ooh, and a 622E. We may not finish in the amount of time, but let's see. 622D says, there is sometimes a temptation to fight mind or judge it. However, I see this can't be helpful. Disregarding mind is the best answer. Losing interest is the way to go. So again, not at all helpful to fight or struggle against mind. Much more helpful just to lose interest. And we've talked about a couple of ways to lose interest. One is bringing the heart into it, asking, what do I really want? You know, that can really shift us so that we lose interest. The other is observing the mind like a curious scientist. You know, really watching it until we learn it just doesn't have the value that we've given it. So there is sometimes a temptation to fight mind or judge it. However, I see this can't be helpful. Disregarding mind is the best answer. Losing interest is the way to go. So I'm going to go ahead and hop on over to 622E. And we'll finish up in the couple of minutes we have left. 622E says, the mind has one purpose, to keep you thinking you are a self. And mind is needed for this illusion to be upheld as true. When mind slows due to lack of attention, glimpses of reality are realized. With even these small tastes, you will have no more interest in being the self made by the mind. You will want your true self. This wanting is mind's end. Because without interest, value, and attention, it cannot appear to be. So again, the reason we listen to the mind is because we want to. We think and believe it has meaning. We think it's interesting. We think what it says matters. But if you pay close attention to the mind, you'll notice that the primary subject in the mind is me, or mine, which is an extension of me. So we'll notice that really, no matter what story it's telling us, what it's really trying to do is just get us sucked into, repeatedly, the idea of I. Me, mine. It wants us to keep believing that. And as long as I believe I, me, mine. I cannot know myself as all and beyond all. So this is why I have to lose interest in the mind. It will prevent me from seeing the truth. And with that said, it is time for me to let go of the mic. So thank you very much, everyone, and I look forward to listening to Satsang.